Hey everybody, welcome to the Billionaire Blueprint. Today we have a really dynamic speaker. It's Chris Miles. Now, listen, he has a podcast that I want to recommend to you. It's Money Ripples. The company is Money Ripples, and he was a financial advisor that is now an financial advisor. He's a cash flow expert. I can't say enough good things about him. I've had a chance to interact with him more than a couple of times. He's a great guy. He's been featured in US News, on CNN. And when it comes to increasing your income, this is one of the guys that we want to talk to. We want to listen to him. We want to take his recommendations. Chris, welcome, man.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here, Steve.
All right, you know what? Let's get into a little background because I do love those origin stories. So take me back a minute when that light bulb went on. Now we know you're a traditional financial advisor. What did that look like making that transition? The light bulb went on and you're like, this isn't working? Was it just ROI? Like what did that look like?
Well, it actually started because being a financial advisor was really easy based on how I was raised. Because even though my parents taught me good values, your word is your bond, work hard, follow your dreams and all that kind of stuff. Like my mom was actually one of those artists, that she was actually trained by the same master painter that trained Bob Ross.
Oh, wow.
So she was doing classes just like that and whatnot. And so she was always about following your dreams, but she was also believing in her mind about money is that she's a starving artist. Once you die, then your art becomes worth more, right? And so it was always like, money was easy come, easy go. With my dad, it was the opposite. He was like, hey, you get a good education, you get that good job, go to college because I didn't. So you should be able to do that. So then your life will be better than mine because I work at a job that drives, pretty much just drives me into the hole. Like this job, like the stress of it, he'd say it literally would kill him, right? And plus, not to mention, he would always say, hey, we can't afford this. We think I am made of money. Money doesn't grow on trees, all those kind of things you probably heard too, maybe, unless you
No,
have
yeah,
poor parents.
all that echoed in our household as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's that Depression era mentality, right? So anyways, I did want to have a different life than what they had. I want to have more opulence and abundance. I wanted to be able to have some freedom. So of course I went to college because I thought that must be the answer. But as I was going to college, I realized, well, the best professors that I know that seem to be better off are the ones that were in the private sector. They were almost like consultants first versus just employees. So then I decided I should probably be a business owner. In fact, I'm going to be a business consultant where I'll consult other business owners. And then that hit me. I said, because the words my dad would always tell me is, well, Chris, you should have real life experience. You shouldn't just have book smarts. You should have, real street smarts too. And so I thought, well, that there's some good validity to that because I could go get my MBA and then I come out as a snot-nosed kid thinking I know everything. And really, I don't know jack squat, So how can I advise people where I have no experience myself? So I actually took a sabbatical from college. I said, I'm going to drop out for a year, find some business to start, and then I'll go back and be a business consultant. So I did. And the first business that came up that was intriguing to me that I thought would be interesting to learn would be business, being a financial advisor. I didn't know they took everybody off the street as long as you could pass a test and not be a criminal. But I thought it would be interesting because if I at least learn about money, well, then that can help me too. If I can learn about investing and whatnot, and even better yet, maybe I can even help my dad who literally thought his job would kill him from the stress. So I started doing that and I did it for 4 years and I was starting to, drink the Kool-Aid. Like I was all about set and forget it, save it forever for some, spend nothing, save everything. And then hopefully someday you got something. And then of course, my dad reaches out to me 4 years in and he says, well, Chris, are you ever going to become my financial advisor? So as I sat down with my dad, I went back, flew back to Oregon, where I grew up. And I'm sitting down at that same kitchen table where you told me you can't afford anything, eat all the food off your plate. Because they're starving kids in Ethiopia. And I'm sitting there at that table, and he says, all right, Chris, I'm 61. I got to retire at some point. So I look at all of his numbers and everything, right? I'm looking at his 401k that he's getting the match on from his company. He's doing a great job there, putting tons of money away in his 401k. He'd also paid off all of his debt, including his house in 18 years. This guy was 100% debt free, stuffing money in 401k. He was like Dave Ramsey's dream come true. Before Dave Ramsey was really big, And then as I looked at all of his numbers, I said, Dad, here's the deal. If you want to retire today at 61 years old, you're going to have to die in about 5 or 6 years because that's when you're going to run out of money. He's like, that's not what I wanted to hear. You're supposed to tell me that I can retire now. I said, well, you could, but you're going to have to die fast. You know, like you can't live too long. You'll run out of money. And he's like, well, okay, well, what do I do? I don't know. You did everything right. Everything I teach as a financial advisor, you did it right. And that was where the epiphany that you just asked me about, Steve, like where did it hit me? It hit me there because remember, I was telling everybody, I was selling the dream. And I was like just a young kid, like 28 years old this time, you know, and I'm telling everybody, you just save for 30, 40 years. You know, even Dave Ramsey says, save $100 a month for 40 years at 12%, you'll be a millionaire, right? Which wasn't even true. He did the math wrong. But I taught the same kind of thing. And then I'm realizing, like, I see my future in my dad. And the sad thing is, I was on the same path too. I was, you know, trying to be cheap. I was turning off the AC in the summertime and the heat in the wintertime just to save a few bucks, right? I was trying to live in a very cheap house, starter home that I was in, trying to keep that mortgage payment as low as possible and even trying to pay it off so that I could be financially free, hopefully by my 40s, if I just save enough money and spend nothing, right? And lo and behold, I'm looking at my future saying, well, there it is. That didn't work. And it became even worse because a friend of mine that I trained to be a financial advisor who went to go do real estate investing, he asked me, he said, well, Chris, well, how many of your clients are financially free where they don't worry about money? I said, well, you had to throw that last part in because they all worry about money. They all worry about outliving their money, running out of money too soon. He says, so none. I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, good job. How many? He's like, how about this, Chris? How many of you guys as financial advisors are financially free? Not the commissions you're earning, but actually doing these investments. Because if anybody's got this figured out and mastered, it should be you guys, right? So how many? And I thought about it. And I thought, well, man, there's like 100 people in my office. Some have worked here since the 1970s. No, they can't retire either. So I said, none. He's like, there's
Wow.
your problem.
It's nothing like your friends and your family to bring true accountability, right?
Yeah, this is all within a few weeks of each other too, right? So I
Oh,
mean,
man.
when the student's ready, the teachers appear, and it's not pretty, you know, and the funny thing is I had just got ar done arguing with him about stocks being better than real estate, but that's where
Okay.
he stopped me. He's like, well, tell me, are the results working? And I'm like, apparently not. And so I said, all right, well, give me something. He's like, no, I'm not going to give you anything because you just got done arguing with me that stocks are better. I'm like, no, I'm serious. Give me something, like, help me out here. Like, if there's a better option, let me know. So he says, well, listen, if you really are serious, and I don't think you are, by the way, he wasn't even selling me anything. He was just pissed at me. He's
Yeah.
like, if you're really serious, go get this book by Robert Kiyosaki called Who Took My Money. It's a lesser known rich dad, poor dad book, right? He's like, go get Who Took My Money. I'll save you the 3 hours if you want to know the cliff notes. Pretty much mutual funds suck. That's the whole premise of the book, right? That financial advisors and mutual funds don't work. And then he says, now listen to this AM talk radio show, because this is pre-podcast era. This AM talk radio show with these two investors that talk about real estate and wealth and things like that. And so I did. I started like consuming all their content, you know, like listening to them every morning for like 2 hours each day. And then after a few months, I had to make a choice. Either I stay on the path I was on or I quit, right? Either I put the blinders on and just keep helping people, supposedly helping people as a financial advisor, or I just quit and I go figure out something else. And so I chose the latter. I said, I can't do this anymore and stay, keep my integrity intact. And so I quit. I'll never teach about money again. I'll just go do mortgages as a mortgage broker and I'll teach ballroom dancing on the side, you know, and that was pretty much what I was doing in 2006. But I wanted to know what they knew. And so I started getting into real estate investing. And this was the big epiphany I had here. You know, it's like, Steve, like the big thing I learned was I was always about how to accumulate money. It was that accumulation theory that every financial advisor teaches you. Is accumulate so much money, compounding interest, eighth wonder of the world crap that they tell you, which by the way, Einstein never said it was the eighth wonder of the world. I even heard Ben Hardy, you know, famous author, I even heard him quote, actually, Einstein confusing it also with Ben Franklin, you know, saying like it's the eighth wonder of the world and those who pay interest pays it and those that don't earn it or whatever, you know, that kind of stuff, right? And it's like,
It got
absolutely.
completely combined with four other quotes.
Yeah, he might have well said Abraham Lincoln said it, right? You know, it was
Yeah.
that kind of quote, like, you know, like everything you learn is on this on social media is true, quote unquote Abraham Lincoln, right? So that's what it was like, and so that's the thing you teach all these kind of falsehoods and stuff to sell an idea or sell a concept, and I realized that accumulation theory wasn't working, but when I could take that money and actually generate real income from it. right? Like, for example, the thing that opened my eyes was I said, wait, if I have $100,000 as a financial advisor, I would tell people if you're trying to retire in your 60s, you should not pull out more than 3% a year. Don't believe the 4% rule. It's not even a rule. And it was debunked like years and years ago, but people still talk about it because it sounds better. But 3%. So imagine you have $100,000, you live on 3%. That's $3,000 a year. Even if you had $1 million, 3% is only 30,000 a year. That means you're a broke millionaire. You're retiring below the poverty line.
Those are tough numbers.
Yeah. But like, take the contrast of that. Like, funny enough, talking about $1 million, I had a client that he found us on our Money Ripples podcast. And then he reached out to us and he hired us for the one-on-one coaching that we did. And he's like, I want to get out of the market. Like, what can I do that actually generates more income? Because my advisor just told me 30,000 a year. Well, between things like looking at duplexes, you know, he was able to buy a few of those managed by somebody else, oil and gas investments, and even doing some things with like apartments, you know, going to like a syndication and things like that. The next thing you know, that same $1 million, instead of making 30,000 a year, is making over $100,000 a year. And that was the epiphany I had. Even in 2006, it was that light bulb moment of, wait a minute, I don't have to save as much money. I could literally, if I get paid 1% a month on an investment, that 100,000 is going to make me 1,000 a month. That $1 million is going to make me 10,000 a month, right? Versus 2,500. And then I have to pay taxes because I got stupid 401ks and IRAs, right? So all that like blew up my world. And that's why I was like, oh my gosh, like people need to know about this. And so even though I vowed never teach about money again, that's why I came out of retirement in 2007 to start doing that. And that's what I've been teaching people ever since.
That's an awesome story. I like those pivotal moments, and there's always something that I do press on our viewers is that when you make those moves, there's fear, but you push through it because you know you got to do it. And it's one of those things like, you know, with high performance coaching or whatever else, it's just something because there's a lot of people on here making pivots. They're getting into real estate for the first time. They're jumping out of their 401k and bringing it self-directed. I mean, there's people making moves, and it's scary. And I just wanted to acknowledge it was scary for me. I'm assuming it was scary for you, but there's, you know, rainbows and butterflies and success on the other side. You just got to keep rolling.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess I did have an advantage because one thing that led me up to it is, in addition to being a mortgage broker, even when I quit, I was also a stock coach. I was actually teaching people how to trade stocks and options in the market. And it's funny because I was probably the salesperson's worst nightmare, even though it usually worked out fine. But I would tell people flat out, if they were coming to and learn how to, you know, trade stocks and options, I would tell them like flat out, you're a gambler. You're not an investor. Because the truth is, investors like to minimize risk to maximize returns. That's what business owners do, right? We minimize risk. We try to control all the risk to maximize returns. In real estate, no different. You could take high risk, but that's how people lose money. You take lower risk and control those risks and those factors so you can ensure you get a return, not just a return on your money, but a return of your money, right? But what's interesting though is I remember learning from other stock traders. They're like, oh yeah, you can do a self-directed IRA. And as a financial advisor, even though I was 3, 4 years in, I was like, what's a self-directed IRA? I've never heard of that. They're like, you can actually invest with your IRA and trade your own stocks and options. Well, not options, but the stocks at least, right? And I was like, really? You can do that? They're like, yeah. I'm like, I thought you could only just go into mutual funds because that's all I was taught. Like, that's the thing is like financial advisors are not licensed to make you more money. They are licensed to sell you very specific products, right? They're licensed to sell you mutual funds with the certain licenses. Maybe they can do individual stocks or bonds or whatever, but depending on their licenses that they have, but they are very much pigeonholed into a certain thing. Even if they know about real estate investments, they can't even offer it. They can't even tell you about it. In fact, half the time they have to report it to their compliance department to see if they can even do their own investing outside of the stock market because even the companies don't want them to do that stuff. That's how regulated and stupid it is. And so that's where you have to like break away from the Wall Street mentality that that's the only way to make money. And you start to realize that Main Street investing things like business and real estate and those kind of things, alternative investments that literally people have invested in gold, silver, doesn't matter, oil and gas, they've invested in these things for thousands of years. And yet people keep thinking that the stock market that's only a few hundred years old is the way to go, right? It's like, no, there are so many more options. And yes, you can go and self-direct it. You know, just like we had somebody reach out to us that was scared. She's like, yeah, but I don't know. Like, can I roll my money over into another IRA and invest it? I said, Google it. Like, you don't have to trust me. Go and Google it and you'll find self-directed IRA. Can I roll my 401k into a self-directed IRA? It will say yes. The AI response will tell you yes every time. So, but again, because financial advisors are not incentivized to sell you on those things because they make no money off of it, they will not tell you about it. These are the very things that they're scared to tell you, just like I was back in the day.
Yeah, that's something when it comes to licensing and incentives, you got to be aware about where, if you're working with someone, what's their come from? Like, what's their incentive? Is their incentive to truly help you? Are they helping themselves? Is it a win-win? What's that look like? And I always tie that back. You know, the first time I made real money, I'm sitting with my CPA and realized that he was more worried about his license than saving me. You know, or creating a good tax strategies for me, because it was, you know, he just wanted to plug me in to the norm, and the norm had me paying way more than legally I was supposed to, but that was fast and easy for him. No stress on his license. And, you know, same thing with the financial advisors. If they're just plugging you in, you're not really getting served at the highest level. And that's kind of what's cool, because what you've created now, you're really serving your people at the highest level. That's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, I love that you brought up CPAs. That's a very good example, right? Because we'll often refer to CPAs as well, because we want people to save on tax and we're not CPAs. But I'll tell you, when I'm trying to interview CPAs, not just for myself, but even for my clients, one of the first questions I'll ask a CPA when I'm trying to find their perspective is, what do you think about 401ks and IRAs?
Yeah.
Right. I'll ask them that, because you're right. Like the normal plug system in, you know, especially for people that they're W-2 workers, is even worse. It's business owners is bad, but it's worse for W-2 workers, because they'll just tell you, like, okay, if you want to save on taxes here, contribute to an IRA or a 401k. But what they're not telling you, because what they're thinking in the back of their mind is, if I want to save them tax today, so they'll hire me today and not fire me tomorrow, I got to save them tax. But the one thing they don't tell you is, 401k and IRA has zero tax advantage. It's just deferring tax down the road. So when they're telling you that, they're like, oh yeah, you should put your money in 401k and IRA. You know, that's what most of them will tell you. I was like, well, bull crap, because there's no savings there. You're just deferring my income down the road. And do I trust the government's going to tax me less in the future? Especially now we're on one of the lowest tax brackets in the last 110 years of the federal tax rate. No, I don't trust that. You know, this might be the best time to pay tax today. And maybe we do a Roth IRA instead or something else, right? So when I ask the CPA, the best answer I like is they will say, well, it depends. It can work in some situations, but not in all. You know, and they're like, and then of course they'll always say, hey, we don't deal with investing. But I'm like, yeah, but what about tax benefits? They're like, yeah, you could get a tax deferral, but you really don't get a benefit. When they say that, I was like, okay, now I know that they're trying to be honest, right? They're trying to be open, so that you're not just trying to create this short-term relationship. You want to know that you're not going to be pissed at them 20 years down the road when you find out you're going to be paying more in taxes tomorrow than you are today.
Yeah. No, it's a great point, and it's great questions. And once again, it's what's the come from, and then hold people accountable for their viewpoint and make sure that you're getting served, because there's an exchange of money. You're paying to try to pay as little as possible, or with a advisor, you're paying to make as much as possible. And if that's not happening, there's something wrong there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what's it look like? You know, I've watched a few, you know, since we've met, I've jumped into Money Ripples, watched some episodes. There's a lot of knowledge being dropped. There's some nuggets. That's amazing. But I want to know what it looks like when I pick up the phone and I want to do the consulting. I want to make that, you know, you've got a bunch of different numbers, but, you know, I keep seeing 30 or 40,000 extra income. Mm-hmm. What's that look like? Like, I pick up the phone, you're onboarding me. What's our initial conversation look like? Are we just unpacking my finances? Bring me through that if you would.
Exactly. I mean, the whole purpose and point is, how do we improve your cash flow as much as possible, right? Now, passive income is what most people come for, but ultimately it's really about how do we have more cash flow available? How do we have income up here, expenses down here, and even better, how can we get you work optional where you have so much passive income coming in, you literally work because you want to, not because you need to pay the bills, because they're covered by your investments, right? And the income that's coming in. And so it's very, very cash flow focused. It's almost like how people talk about future planning, with financial advisors. We do present planning. Like, how do we plan for the present and create money now so that you have even more in the future, right? So for example, if somebody comes to us and we have like the passive income calculator people can fill out and see like what their number is, because that will tell you within 12 months how much passive income you could create in your personal situation, but really what we're doing is we're looking for where's their available cash, right? And this is not even talking about what we do in the first stage of our process when we work, one-on-one. We do this like white glove, really like elite process with people. When we're working with them, we're going through everything. We're looking at, cash, line item by line item, like how much are you spending, how much are you making, even like where do you have your money and assets? Do you have debts? Where is that? And how's that doing for you? Are there debts we should be paying off or debts that we shouldn't be paying off? Are you overpaying in taxes, like we just talked about, right? Like, what are some things we can do to even improve your cash flow now? And then, of course, move into investing and passive income as well, too. So it's really a five-stage process. One is we call it the passive income launch pad, right? We look for the low-hanging fruit. Where do we find that cash? Give you an example. We had one client where she came to us. She had like $5 million, mostly in company stocks like Google, Meta, all like tech stocks. And so she's knowing it's like a ticking time bomb when you have tech stocks. Like they boom and they do great. But what happens when they don't, which we're kind of seeing recently happening. And so she's like, I might need to diversify away from just being all in tech stocks. So she came to us to do real estate investing. But as we started to see all of her numbers and we started to look at all of it, and that's one thing, by the way, you'll never see financial advisors look at your cash flow. They don't care about your expenses. They just want to know, what do you got to work with? I'm going to use that, right? And that's all they care about, We're like, no, if we can improve your cash flow, that helps the situation. So in their case, although they're making like hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, they're spending about 22,000 a month. Still able to pack away a lot of money because they're making way more than 22,000 a month. But as I looked at their situation, I said, wait a minute, even not even look at the taxes, which that's another one, but even just looking at the cash flow, here's some loans that if we could pay off and consolidate, like do a cash out refinance of their house, pay off these certain specific loans based on this kind of index. I have a cash flow index that I've taught people how to use. Like based on this, we can free up $4,000 a month. And so we did that. Like freed about $4,000 a month, even before we invested a dime. And it was like virtually no money out of pocket too, to do that. So we started there. We did actually have a meet with CPA, freed up over 30,000 a year there. So even before we got to investing, we realized we freed up like 75,000 a year. So think about that. That's like 6,000 a month. So remember their expenses were 22,000 a month. Now we got it down to get them the financial independence. Now we only have to hit 16,000 a month, right? And it didn't sacrifice her lifestyle. That's the key. We didn't have to say, you got to live on rice and beans like Dave Ramsey teaches. You don't have to do that crap, right? You can actually still have the same lifestyle, just have your money working better. Then we went to the next thing. We was like, well, let's look at some of your assets. Oh, you got a rental property. Oh, you got all this equity, but it sucks on the cash flow side. Let's sell that, transfer that money, that equity from that property tax-free to another property, and we improve their cash flow by another $2,000 a month, right? So now they've got 2,000 a month passive income. They already reduced about 6,000 a month average on their expenses. We're already at 8,000 a month or about 100,000 a year. Now we're even finally getting to the point of what to do with their stocks, right? And then they only liquidated some of it. They kept most of it still in the stocks, liquidated some to do a variety of like to really delegate or not delegate, sorry, to diversify into different investments. So they looked at different things from rentals to lending your money, which is much better kind of situation now lately, especially with how interest rates have been, right? Even with syndications, do you do apartments, self-storage? How about industrial and things like that? How about oil and gas and mineral rights and things there, and even raw land and all that kind of stuff that you can do to just kind of diversify your income stream so that even if one of those things doesn't do so hot, right? You've got all these other things to make sure that you're still getting paid each and every month. And that's what we did. It was like over a couple hundred grand a year to be able to improve their cash flow by. And then that's what we do. We really just do that passive income launch pad to find that low-hanging fruit. Step two is explore options, especially when you're looking at investments. Three is you start to commit and actually take action on that and start to invest in those things. Four, we make sure we protect your assets. What's the legal work you need to have in place? Make sure you're protecting from taxes, also from lawsuits and whatnot, insurances and whatever you need to have there to protect all that wealth so that one little event can't take it all away. And then five is what I call the income avalanche. So just like in their case, they improve their cash flow by 200,000 a year. Now we take that 200,000 along with money they're already saving, use that to invest to create an even a bigger one. Now it goes from like 200,000, like over 230,000 the next year. Then you reinvest that money, and that's like over 270,000 the next year. And it creates this, instead of compounding interest, we compound the income. And that's how you create freedom.
Well, today's dollar is always worth a little bit more than tomorrow's, right? That's what I
Yes.
love about the cash out refi or deciding if you're gonna sell and you know and or flip the property.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me, and I'm sure you see this all the time, how people have equity in these properties and they kind of just forget it. And they either don't know or don't know how to act. Like it's a piggy bank, man. You use it. And unless
Yeah.
you've got some strategy around, you know, trying to have it pay to zero and just have it cash flow. But I'm not really a fan. Like I've rarely seen that work. What's your experience around that?
Oh yeah. Like that's the thing is that, like you said, you can only really control today, right? Like that's the only thing we have control of. We don't have control of what inflation is going to look like. We don't even know what you're going to be alive in 5 or 10 years, you know? So that's the one thing I love is that if we focus on today, what can we do to today to improve cash flow right now? How do we make sure that your money's working efficiently, right? And that every dollar has a job and that it's doing what it's doing, but it still can buy you that freedom. And that's where the passive income comes in as well. And that's where the real freedom comes from, right? You know, and I, of course, I even mentioned like somebody has like a couple million dollars. It doesn't mean you have to have millions of dollars to sit around. I had a guy that literally had $250,000 sitting in mutual funds, you know, and he worked for Hollywood. Now think about Hollywood. Like Hollywood had a pretty rough couple of years. I mean, they had like, you know, 2020, they were shut down for like more than half of that year. 2023, there was a writer's strike, and they were shut down for 6 months of that year too, right? And what was cool is that he worked started working with us in 2019. And so with that quarter million, and he just bought rental properties, which right now, you know, could be so-so, right? But back then they were cash flowing pretty nicely. So he bought a bunch of rental properties that quarter million. Well, guess what? Well, that money he would take to reinvest, even though he had to live on some of it some of the time because of the, you know, Hollywood shutdowns that would happen during that time, he had enough money coming in that covered most of his expenses. He only had to come out of the savings because we kept money in savings too for emergencies, like a few hundred dollars a month to bridge the gap. And so now he's got like almost $4,000 a month coming in from his investments. And the crazy thing is his quarter million, now the equity in those properties is worth over two-thirds of $1 million. So now it's like worth almost $700,000 from a quarter million just four, really like 5, 6 years ago. And that's what I love is that it not just grew his wealth and his net worth, which he was even like, whoa, I'm actually a net worth millionaire. I'm legitimately a millionaire now. He's like, I was not even close, you know, 5 years ago or so. I'm like, no, like you just had it. That's the thing. There's people that become accidental millionaires buying a real estate property, right? You know, they just don't know how to do it right. But you actually did it intentionally. And even with these hiccups that you had in your life to slow down your saving, it didn't matter. You're now at the point where you're literally just $1,000 a month away from being completely financially free and you're 50 years old.
Nice. Yeah, that freedom, that's what we're after.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So hey, as much of experience as you've had now, as many clients as you've onboarded, is there one or two consistent mistakes that you just always see that you always like the go-to? You're like, "Oh, of course."
Yeah. Well, and it's not their fault. It's just you have to break away from that traditional mentality. So the one I mentioned is that accumulation mentality, which is I gotta accumulate my money. You know, if I listen to Dave Ramsey all day, again, he's great for budgeting and all that kind of stuff. He's good at getting you to zero, but he's not getting you to wealthy. That's the one place where he lacks. He teaches things that are really just not true. Like the market has never returned 12% long term average. You know, I know how people always argue with me. They're like, well, last 15 years, like, yeah, the last 15 years has been ridiculously higher than usual for history, right? Long term, it's like right now, it's the 30-year average is 8.75%. You know, that's better than what most people get because most of the time they never even get that much. So most people think, well, I'll make enough compounding interest and that should be fine. Again, the problem is they keep thinking of this accumulation theory, right? Like, I gotta accumulate my money. than like what I was thinking myself, live on less than interest. So I was thinking, if as a young financial advisor, if I save up $2 million, if I'm just cheap enough, I'll live on that 3% or 60,000 a year, and then I'm fine. Because 5,000 a month is an amazing lifestyle in 2002.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2025, not so much. Like that would be the equivalent now with how you really look at that, what that bought you. That's really like making at least 12,000 a month today, right? So I was thinking like a 12,000 a month lifestyle, but I was thinking, oh, if I can just do that by my 40s, oh, I'd be set. I just got to save enough. But when you take that actual, you know, really income mentality, right? That acceleration mentality, as I call it, which is how do I get this to pay me income now? And then I can compound the income and reinvest that money. It's a totally different story, right? Just like, you know, like I said with him, like he did it with rentals, and because it kept compounding and he of course grew equity and all this other stuff. I mean, his money like averaged like 30% a year when you factor all that together. You know, that's pretty incredible. You didn't get that even in the market, in the stock market, yeah. Right? Heck, I had one rental property in Memphis, Tennessee, same kind of thing, but like it's done over 400% since 2018, even though the stock market did 125%. And yeah. The income I'm earning from that thing is paying me quintuple what I've got from the stock market. You know, like it's always about that income. That's the big focus. So that's the number one mistake, is get more on that income focus. Because when you realize if I can make 1% a month on 100 grand, that's 1,000 a month versus 3,000 a year in the traditional mentality. Mistake number two, and this is again, everything taught by every financial pundit out there, every financial advisor, is that they all teach you to lock your money away in prison. I teach you to get your money out of prison. Think about it. Everything they tell you to do, like what my dad did, right? He put his money in prison. He locked it up in the 401k, which you can't even get to unless you either quit or get fired. None of which I recommend, right? But you can't really access that money and you have no control over it. I mean, you just given like their little suite of options saying, well, here's the place you can invest it and that's it. And you're stuck and it's locked in there. I find it fascinating when people are like, well, I don't like to take high risks. You know, I'm a conservative investor. I'm like, no, you're a comfortable saver. You're just comfortable because tens of millions of people do the same thing as you, but those tens of millions of people are all going broke. I mean, there's a study that came out. I mean, we look at Fidelity, their stats, 900,000 people out of over 45 million account users have at least $1 million. That means less than 2% of people actually have $1 million with Fidelity. That's the dream, right? Remember the million, you live on 30,000 a year. Well, here's the crazy part. Transamerica did a separate study of those same people with over $1 million in their accounts. 35% surveyed thought it would take a miracle to be able to retire. Why? Because they knew if you have $1 million living on 30,000 a year, you can't do that. They're like, you got to have multiple millions to have even a middle-class lifestyle. And so that's the stuff that's never taught in the media, right? That's the thing you never hear about, these tens of million people saying, I'm a conservative investor. No, you're a comfortable saver. You're just doing what everybody's done. But guess what? There's about a 98% failure rate. That's like going to a restaurant and you see 50 reviews, only one of which has 5 stars. You say, you know what? That place looks good. I should try that food too, right? You're not going to go to that place. You're not going to go because your mom gave it 5 stars, you know? And then all the rest of people say, this food sucks. It like literally got me in the hospital. You're not going to go there. Why would you go back to financial advisors that just offer you this crappy, really bad, like, you know, gut-wrenching Mexican food that all is packaged the same way? They just call it different names, but it's all the same mutual funds and insurances and annuities. That's all they offer, right?
Well, so it's an awareness piece, right?
It really is.
It's like we've literally been trained to put our money in the banks and expect nothing back. And as you go back in history, you can literally watch a graph of the returns get less and less and less because each generation was trained to expect less. Yeah, and now it's to the point where they're like, well, it's just a safe place to keep your money. But we have this financial planning department over here and they'll make you 2% or 3% or 5 or, you know, 5.5, whatever, wherever we're at. And it's just, to your point, it's not even keeping up with inflation. You know, you're talking about going back to 2002.
Yeah, that's right.
The you know, to use the buzzword, the math doesn't math.
That's right. It doesn't math. Well, and it makes perfect sense. What you're saying is exactly. If you understand, it's just like the whole debate with pharmaceutical companies, right? When we're realizing more and more, they're like, oh, they didn't even make a good product. They just wanted to pump something out to make, you know, to profit off a bad thing, you know? Sorry, I'm not going to say what it was, 2020, but we know, we all know that happened. Like, we all know that those companies cannot be trusted because of the financial self-interest. Now, I'm not against companies having profits and having financial self-interest. That's fine. It's just at what expense, at what cost? Is it a win-lose scenario or could it be a win-win? Sure, you could argue there's a good win banks and people because they give you liquid money, they pay you a teeny bit on it, the little point nothing percent. Fantastic, right? I chose that, right? And like you said, I expect less too because of it. But, you know, but think about all the rules of financial investing, right? You save your money. How much of your money are you supposed to save? Like everything, right? It used to be 10%. Now they're saying, now they bumped it up, even not now, but previously bumped it to 20%. Now they're saying probably 25 to 30%. And that's just to barely survive. Right? They keep bumping the number up. And so like my dad who put away, like the financial advisor said, then finds out it's not enough. Who gets blamed? Not the financial advisor, but my dad saying, well, you just didn't save enough. Well, I saved what you told me to save. Oh, I'm sorry. I got to retire. See ya. You know, that's kind of what it's like, but it's the financial institution that laid out all the rules. They tell you to save everything, save it forever because that compounding interest is the eighth wonder of the world. But guess what? It's also great for them to compound the fees that they earn off of you because just so you know, one of those rules, they talk about high risk creates high returns. They don't believe that. They don't take any of the risk. They let you take all the risk gambling in the markets where they take their guaranteed fees off of you, whether you make money or not. Even financial advisors, right? If they charge you that 1% or 2% a year, you lose. See, you went from, I had this guy I talked to. He's like, yeah, I've got $900,000 with this financial advisor. He charges me 1.5% a year. I said, you know, you're paying $14,000 a year for this guy to basically just guess what's going to happen in the market. He doesn't have any control. He doesn't know what's going on. You could do the same thing as him. You're paying him $14,000 a year for nothing. But on top of that, what happens if you lose 20%? You lose 200 grand. What does he lose? Oh, now he just makes 10,500 a year in fees instead of 14,000 a year. Boo hoo. He still makes money while you lost money. You know, how's that real? So understand that all this financial, putting your money in prison, is taught by them. They want you to lock it up. They want you to keep it there forever. Even when you pull it out, they say take off less than the interest so you don't run out of money. But it also means so they don't run out of making fees off of you. And yeah, vice versa. Home equity is the other prison that we're always taught. In addition to saving money in IRAs and 401ks, right? And lock it away forever. The home equity is the same thing. Banks, why have they, if they really, really wanted you to pay off your mortgage faster, right? Or no, sorry, take that back. They do want you to pay it off faster. That's the truth. But we're always taught to pay it off slower, right? Like, oh, they want you to do that 30-year mortgage because you know how much they're going to make an interest off of you over those 30 years? That's ridiculous. Well, if they really wanted you to do a 30-year mortgage, they would incentivize you by the interest rate. They would say, yeah, we'll give you a lower interest rate on 30 years because we'll compound it forever, right?
That's right.
But the truth is they don't make compounding interest on that money. It's simple interest. But two, they want to get payback as soon as possible. They want that principal coming back because with every dollar you give them, they're legally able to go and loan out 10 more dollars. They create acceleration of money. Like we talked about, they're creating income off of your money, right? Well, they're telling us to accumulate money with them and accumulate equity in that property, pay off that mortgage so that it gives them less and less risk because they want you to pay it off faster. That's why you get the lower interest rate with a 15-year mortgage than a 30. They want you to pay it off faster so they get more cash to then create more speed with their money by lending out more of those dollars, right? That's what they really want.
Let's touch on that. Yeah. Let's touch on that real quick because there's some people that probably haven't been exposed to fractional banking just so that they understand and that's broken down because essentially what happens when money comes into a bank, they're allowed to loan out X. And it's not just one. It always was 9. Is it 10 now?
It depends. It depends where they hold the money. The standard is about 10. I know like in the state of Utah, they allowed legally for $6, you know, to loan out. But, you know, if you remember the Big Five, they actually loosened theirs to where they 40-1. So for every dollar you either give them in principal, like paying extra on your mortgage, or a dollar you put in savings, they can loan out 40. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were allowed to do over 100. So that's why all those companies had to be bailed out, right? Is because of that. But most of the time it's usually about 9 or 10, like you said.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy how banks can even fail being able to, you know, if you had good stewardship of those funds. And it really, when you run the numbers and that light bulb comes on, once again, we're trained to give them our money for free because it's a safe place. That's right. They're making huge profits on our money.
Huge.
And
And
it's
yeah, it's not, everybody imagines a bank being like, if you remember DuckTales, Scrooge McDuck swimming in the coin and stuff. That's what they think. They think like banks somehow just store money like we do. They don't. They move money, right? They don't store it. They don't want to collect dust. They want to make money off of it. And so think about it. If you put $100,000 into a savings account and maybe you put it into a CD and you're like so proud of yourself for getting that 3% a year that you pay taxes on, right? That 100,000 allows them to loan out $1 million. And what people don't realize is that, of course, like go to any board. This is where arbitrage comes in with that fractional reserve banking, right? Fractional reserve banking is the ability for them to loan out more money than they have. The arbitrage means that they're able to loan out money and make a higher interest rate than what they pay you. So say you do get paid 3% on that 5-year CD, right? Well, you also see that the reader board flips through the screen. You see loans and you see this 5-year auto loan at, say, 7%. And you're like, wait a minute. They pay me 3, then make 7. They're making 4% a year off me. And the answer is no, they're not. They're making more. Because think about it. If it's, say, that car, again, make an easy number. Say that car loan's $100,000. You're getting paid 3% on your 100,000 in that CD, right? So they're paying you 3,000 a year. That's their debt to you. By the way, if debt were so evil, why do banks have so much of it? You never see a bank call up and say, you know what, I just got done watching the Dave Ramsey show. I just realized I'm in debt, and debt is dumb. So I'm gonna pay you back all your money in savings because I don't want, because you know what that's like, paying interest over your lifetime? It's horrible. It's dumb. Dave Ramsey said so. He's smarter than me because I'm a bank. No, never does that happen, right? It's no, it's instead, it's like, no, you got that 3,000 you're gonna pay. That's their debt to you. But they know they're going to make 7,000 a year loaning out for that car loan at 7%. But guess what? Because of that fractional reserve banking, they can do 10 of those car loans making 7,000. Do the math. They made 70,000 a year off of your $3,000. That means, I don't know the exact math, but it's over 2,000% a year off that money. If you can make $70,000 by only paying 3,000, how many times did you do it? How much money would you borrow from somebody else? Be able to say, you know what? I want to make money off of this. I'll use a credit card for that matter, because I know that credit card is not going to charge me 70,000 bucks. It's going to be way less. That's the point. That's why they love having you just save your money, lock it up, put it in a prison so that they can use your money. What if we just turn the tables and you were the one to do that? What if you said, no, I'm going to take control of my own money. I'm going to get it out of that prison. I'm going to, even if I hold it in a simple checking or savings account, or we talk about infinite banking, using that or whatever it might be, having that money. And then I use that money to go and invest on my terms, not on yours.
That's right. Yeah, I love leverage. I love arbitrage. And speaking of that, we touched on the two common mistakes. What about the best strategies? Because it we're like we're almost there. We're dancing around them, right? I think as far as what I know of your programs.
Yeah, so getting out of prison, let's just talk about that strategy. How do you actually implement it, right? Well, number one is stop funding the 401ks and IRAs. Unless you're okay not having any freedom until you're well into your 60s or 70s, right? I'm not saying there's not a purpose for them, but I get people all the time who are like, they're like, yeah, I'm 40 years old. Cool. When do you want to be able to quote unquote retire, or at least be work optional where you just work by choice? Oh, 50. I want to do it by the time I'm 50. Well, why are you using the wrong vehicle to get there? That's like me trying to like drive to Paris, France. My car will eventually sink into the Atlantic Ocean trying to drive to Paris, France. You need the right vehicle to get you there. Trying to put your money in a 401k where they're going to slap you with a 10% penalty and taxes for touching it before you're 59 and a half is not the right vehicle. So even if it's like, get that money away, stop funding that thing. I mean, if you have it already, great. You can do a self-directed IRA and invest with that, like we talked about earlier. That there's still options there. But don't add new money to it if that's not what you're trying to do. If you want freedom faster than age 60 or later, if they change the rules, do something else. Even if it's just simply putting that money in simple checking or savings account, that works. I mentioned like infinite banking using whole life insurance. I use that because it's like a tax-free high yield savings account. If it's designed the right way, you can actually use that too. That's another mistake, by the way. Talk about locking money in prison. Whenever somebody buys one of those policies from an insurance agent who's not an investor, and they're literally just insurance agents, that's a career, and they tell them, hey, we'll lock it away till retirement. Most people don't realize you can actually get the money out and use that money to invest to make cash flow today. Again, same thing.
So are you talking about the wrong type of policy or not using it correctly?
It could be either. It could be both. Sometimes they do use wrong types of policies. Sometimes I see people using like indexed universal life or universal life in general. That's not a very good one to use if you're trying to invest. I mean, they slap surrender fees and all kinds of stuff on you, and it gets more expensive over time. So many times you end up losing the policy because you can't afford it anymore. Whole life is better, but it's got to be a specifically designed whole life where they minimize the cost, which is what we do. We minimize the cost to rock bottom, so then your ROI on your cash goes up. So you actually make a lot more money. It actually becomes more like a tax-free high yield savings account versus I'm paying the insurance agent's commissions, right? So you
Right.
got to be careful of that. But yeah,
But
so that's
you can put extra money in those policies as well, right?
correct. Yeah. So like give you an example. Like the reason that whole life insurance, using that as an example, right, is it gets trashed on so much by like guys like Dave Ramsey, is because he's right. I had this insurance agent that reached out to me. He says, "Hey, this is an insurance company I know you use. Can you look at this policy to see about this woman's policy and how it is?" This woman, she was a neurosurgeon, right? Paying in 60,000 a year, $5,000 a month into this policy. Guess how much of that? So if you don't understand whole life, for those of you listening right now, whole life insurance, it has a death benefit like term insurance does, like normal death insurance, as I call it, but it also has this tax-free savings account. Most of the time, what happens, especially with whole life, is it's front loaded. All the costs are up front and it gets cheaper over time. Opposite of term insurance. Term insurance starts cheap and gets more expensive over time. Whole life starts out expensive and gets cheaper over time. But they call it whole life because you could pay the same premium your whole life and you'll always have a death benefit, right? So it never goes up on you. It's like a 30-year mortgage payment. The longer you have it with inflation, the cheaper it gets, right? But you also pay more to principal as time goes on. That's kind of like what whole life is like. This extra account, this tax-free savings account. More and more money goes in as time goes on. But the way that this one was designed was the traditional whole life, the one that Dave rips on. She was putting in 60,000 a year. Year one, how much was in that tax-free savings account? Zero. Zero was in this tax-free savings account. Year two, she put in another 60,000. Now she's put in 120,000. Zero in this account. All of it's going to pay for the insurance costs, which pays the agent's commissions. He gets paid a percentage of that, right? Year three, she puts in that third $60,000, finally has $30,000. So half of it finally goes in year three. So you think about it, she puts in $180,000, $30,000 she has to show for it. So I showed him, I said, "Hey, listen, I actually write with the same company. Let me show you what I would do." And I write it the same way that we do it in our companies, the same way we do it for ourselves and everybody else. It could be our mother, it doesn't matter. Well, I showed the same thing, $60,000 year one, not zero. $50,000. Year two, put in another 60. Now she's got almost $110,000. Year three puts in 60. Now she's got like over like $160,000, right? So she has almost as much as she paid it even by the third year versus 30,000. So it saved her $130,000 in cost. Now, when most people, the reason that people don't think they can do anything with this is because the agent just tells them, don't look at those early years because it's so expensive. Ignore it, set it and forget it, right? But then they'll say, yeah, down the road, you can finally pull it out as tax-free retirement income, which is true. But if you have more cash available now, guess what you can do with that cash? You can invest it now. You don't have to wait till you're 60. You can take that money out now and use it just like a savings account. You can use it that way. So that's why I tell people, like, even if you've got a policy, insurance policy, even if it's not set up by us, you might have money in there that we could be using right now to generate passive income today. So
Yeah.
get that money out of prison.
Yeah. That's exactly right. It's got to be deployed. It's got to be deployed correctly, actually doing something besides collecting dust or not helping the banks.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the infinite banking is that one of your favorite tools? Because
Yeah, yeah.
that's one way to break money free for sure, right?
Yeah,
So
definitely. It's one
give us
strategy to
one,
use.
give us one other strategy if you can.
Yeah, another strategy, like I said, like literally you can just use a savings account, right? Like so here's what I do. Like if you were to combine infinite banking with normal like investing, because I've had people say, okay, I can see now if I access money from savings, mutual funds that are actually available, not like my current company 401k where it's locked up, right? Maybe old IRAs, Roth IRAs, maybe equity from properties. By the way, a lot of people don't realize you don't have to always get debt on a property to get access to equity. I just interviewed a guy on my show where you can actually act, he pays you the equity. And then you pay them on the back end like 10 years later when you try to sell or refinance the property, right? You can do things like that. You know, you can get equity out of properties, and or a lot of times if people already have rentals because the rentals don't pay well, sell the rentals even, and then take the cash and invest it to create more income, right? So we're looking at all these places. But like, say for example, you have like a quarter million. This was actually a real scenario. This guy had a quarter million dollars. He said, "Hey, I've learned about this infinite banking strategy. Sounds awesome. And I saw this guy talking about it. It sounds like I should run every dollar through my infinite banking policy. You know, so I'm going to throw all quarter million in. Can I do that?" And I said, "One, probably not. The insurance company's going to say, why do you, they're not even going to look at why you want to put the cash in. They're going to look at, can you afford to put that much cash in, right? They're going to look at it saying, well, are you worth it? You know, is your life worth it? You know, like that death benefit it buys you, is that too much death benefit? Believe it or not, even if you can afford to pay the premiums, insurance companies do not want to give you more insurance, right? Again, they're in the business to stay in business. They don't just want you to get a $1 billion policy and then they lose all their cash, right? So I told him, I was like, you could do something like that. But here's the problem. If you say in first year, even if you use our policies, which are better than like the one I described from that other woman, if you use our policies, you throw in 250,000. Well, guess what? You only have maybe $200,000 you can access. So you've now paid 50,000 in those insurance costs. So instead, here's what I would do. You see that emergency fund you have over there that we will not touch, we will not invest with? He's like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, you have about like $70,000 in there. Let's use that money to fund the policy those first few years and then take all quarter million and then start investing it in other places, right? Sorry, just a second. Excuse me. Woo. Or cut that out. So I said, now you can take that full 250,000 and invest it. And say you make 10% a year on it. Guess what? You're making 25,000 a year. Well, what if that insurance policy you got was only 25,000 a year in the first place? Now you got 25,000 a year of passive income coming in. After a couple of years, you'll just use that passive income to pay for your policy. It's zero out of pocket, right? Yes, you got the policy. You're building up cash there. You can invest with it too. But let's just get all your money out. Let's invest it now. Make the money now instead of trying to dump it all in a policy. An insurance agent will love that because they'll make more in commissions. But me, as an investor perspective, I would say, let's do a smaller policy and instead get all your money working for you now. Whether you're putting into like, you know, lending your money out to make, you know, 10, 12% a year, whether you're, you know, going to apartment buildings, you know, mineral rights, rentals, whatever it might be, get that money out working today. And then just get a smaller policy. And then, of course, if you have more cash flow, because all of a sudden you're like, well, now I can save 50,000 a year. Great. Well, now you have this 25,000 a year policy you have. You can't go more than that. Get another one, get a second one for 25,000, or get one on your spouse or on your kids and start funding theirs too. And you can do that too. And then you can pull it out and use that money to invest too, right? So it's just a very, if you get it all to work together, you'll realize you can have your cake and eat it too, right? You can have the cash flow now. You can have the passive income money work for you. And yes, you could still have this extra little benefit where literally with the life insurance, you can actually make money in two places at the same time because you can actually borrow the money from the insurance company and actually get paid interest from them and get the money out and earn interest too from the investments and make money in two places at once. Whole nother topic, but that's what I'm just saying. Like the strategy is you don't have to like store your money and you don't have to throw it into an IRA or a Roth, although you could do that. You might just have it in cash and then get it out, get it deployed, get it out in those investments to start paying you income now.
Yeah, that's right. Wait, let's wrap up with 'cause I think it's really powerful. I saw a Money Ripples episode about where Chris Miles' money is at. Well, like what does Chris invest in? And I think it's important for us to be transparent. Like, what am I into? Like, what real estate stuff do I have going on? What notes am I flipping? I think same thing. Like, if we're transparent, let's share that and kind of wrap up from there.
Yeah, so disclaimer, you know, Steve and I are not giving investment advice, right? We
That's
always had to
right.
say that because everybody's like, oh, Chris invests here. I'm going to do that. Like, well, you could. Here's one thing I'll say about those plans. It should always be customized to what you like, right? And I'll tell you, even my own clients don't all invest like me, even though they know what I invest in, because they have their own things that they prefer or like to do instead. And that's perfect. You should create a plan that best fits you. Now, for me personally, over the years, it's evolved and changed. My first investment, first and foremost, especially when I was trying to dig out of a $1 million debt hole, was my business, right? I was investing in paying off debt and in my business and growing that business to have more cash flow and more profits than pay off that debt. But as I'd done that and I got my cash flow under control, then I started building up those assets. That's where I started to build up my savings to then invest that. And yeah, I did do infinite banking and that kind of stuff too. But I don't consider that an investment. I consider that a savings vehicle. Then I started getting more into rentals. And I still have rentals to this day, even though I've sold off a lot of them. So if you were to ask me, Where have I invested? Rentals. I've loved rentals. Overall, for the most part in history, rentals are a great way to go. Personally, I like turnkey rentals where somebody else manages the property, not me, because I'm a crappy property manager. I buy every person's sob story and I'll let them not pay me rent. So I need somebody that's a good pit bull, with a heart, a pit bull with a heart, as I like to say, right? That they're going to hold to the line. They're going to hold to their boundaries, say, no, you do need to pay us this rent. We'll be flexible within reason, but you still need to pay us, right? So I still have a few rentals that are doing great. But lately I haven't been buying as many rentals because the cash flow has been pretty dismal, right? Because of those higher interest rates. But I will tell you, I'm actually already thinking of going back into doing some more rentals again, even though the cash flow is not as good, just because there's all that leverage you can create, almost like the banks do on us. But if you think about it, if you put a 20% down payment on a property, any appreciation you get is a 5X factor, right? For example, you buy a $200,000 home, yeah, and it appreciates 10%, that's 20 grand. You might think, oh, well, I made 10%. Well, only if you bought it all in cash, but I don't. I go to the bank, I put a $40,000 down payment, right? And then that $200,000 property now is worth $220,000. Guess what? It wasn't a 10% growth. It was that 40,000 became 20. That's a 50% growth just on appreciation alone, right? So again, that's one of my favorite places over time, generally speaking. Right now I have money in oil and gas. Things like that where we're actually getting paid off drilling because I have to pay more at the gas pump. I might as well get paid on my money too. So I kind of make money that way. My favorite one right now, besides my business, that's always a great one to invest money to. But my favorite one right now has been raw land. Raw land has been great because, one, it's a partnership. I don't do any of the work. I love that part. I just finance it all. But two, I've probably put in over $500,000 into it, and it's now cash flowing over $13,000 a month.
Now, are you talking raw land that's getting ready to go through the entitlement process and getting ready to be developed, or are you flipping raw land?
Flipping it. Yeah. Good point. Yeah. So it's not like I'm trying to develop or do any of that. Although I'll sometimes lend money to people, and lending is another thing I do a lot as well that I've liked lately in the last couple of years. I might lend to those guys that do that stuff, but when it comes to the raw land, it's more you buy the raw land at wholesale. You sell it to somebody at retail, but they're going to pay you like they're paying a mortgage. They're not going to pay it all outright in cash. They're going to say, yeah, I'll finance these terms over the next 10, 15 years at 10%, right? So maybe I buy a piece of land. And when I say I don't do any of it. I let my partners do all that. But when they buy the piece of land, say they buy it for $8,000, but then they turn around and sell it to somebody else at $30,000. And then I'm getting paid like say 10% interest over the next, 10, 15 years. Not on the full 30,000, but principal and interest as they're paying it down. I'll easily make on average at least a 20 to 30% per year compounding interest type of return, right? So that's been one of my favorites just because it's not as competitive. There's so many people out there trying to do fix and flips and do things like that. Or, I know self-storage and rentals, apartment rentals have had a hard couple of years, but that's the one place right now where there's not a lot of competition, but there's plenty of opportunity.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. That I think it's really powerful to have people know what we're doing, how we're deploying. And like you said, we're just sharing what we're doing. We're not making recommendations.
Yeah.
But I think that transparency is paramount. So closing thoughts, is there anything that you need to share?
Yeah, I would just say kind of go on with the whole theme, right? Is just, I always teach this, is get lean, get liquid, and get out, right? Yeah. Get lean, obviously being a wise steward of your money. Even like we were talking about that couple that had 5 million in stocks, right? We got them leaner. It doesn't mean you have to be cheap. It doesn't mean you have to ruin your lifestyle, but just find ways to free up cash flow. Then get liquid, get your money out, get it out of those places that where it's trapped in prison. And then get it out to invest for you to create passive income and just create that income avalanche, right? When you get that passive income, reinvest that and keep going. That's what I did with that raw land. I started with 300,000, right? But then we keep reinvesting the proceeds over the last 3+ years and voila, that 500,000 now is generated to over 13,000 a month of passive income. So that's the real key to freedom, is just taking that money and leveraging and using it instead of sacrificing 30 or 40 years. I'm just here to tell you don't have to do that where there's little to no hope. There's a lot of hope and doing these things. And these are things that have been proven to work for tens of millions of us. Why not be you too?
Yeah. Money loves speed when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. So, all right. Well, hey, everybody, check out Chris Miles on the podcast, Money Ripples. Chris, I really appreciate how generous you were with your time. The knowledge that's flowing out of you is amazing. We appreciate you. And everybody else, we'll see you on the next one. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks. And shut up, Chris.
That was great.
Your time, meaning you talk too much, Chris. See, I told you, I did it again.
Wow, it's
perfect.
But
you ask really good questions too. Like
I appreciate that. Well, I think here's the thing. People are going to absorb what they're ready to absorb. And yeah. I learned that. Did you really teach ballroom dancing?
I did. Yeah. Okay. I actually used to be one of the nation's top amateur ballroom dancers.
That's awesome, man. So, I went through a phase where I had a ton of horses, taught people how to ride, how to, yeah. You know, like a ranch that was an investment property. And, I would always just tell people everything. And they'd be, mm-hmm. I felt like I was droning on. And at the end, they're always like, man, I appreciate you saying so much. And they absorbed the 10 percenters absorbed 10%. And
yeah.
The 90 percenters absorbed 90. But the mm-hmm. information was there. It was hitting. And then the next time they hear it, they're like, oh, fractional
bank. Whole new experience.
I've right? heard, I've heard something about that. It's already mm-hmm. in there. It's already lubed in the gears. And so I think that we really serve our people at a higher level when we just go there. And if they're not ready, at least they're hearing it for the first time.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, I'm sure I'll hear different stuff when I become a billionaire finally. Right. If I do, I don't know. That's not really my goal. I don't really care if I become a billionaire or not, but it's true. Like you do hear things at different levels and different things stick that were said. You just didn't hear it quite yet. You weren't there at that place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's good information on that one for sure. I appreciate your time, man.
Yeah. Same here, Steve. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I know it's your dinner time, so I don't want to keep you too long.
Yeah. What's it look like? I know we just did one. Mm-hmm. Do you have a studio? Is there a time that we could actually like sit down and do a one-on-one and like do a longer podcast, whether it's mine or yours?
Yeah. I mean, I know you just did mine because yours comes out next week, you know, next Friday.
We're getting ready to launch. We're launching another podcast called Love and Money.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's actually my wife and I, she's a, uh-huh. she's has a course where she like teaches, essentially it's dating, but it's not because uh-huh. it's creating self-worth and making sure that women are empowered and they're not falling in all the pitfalls that society has created for them.
Right.
But what's happened is that I've been a guest and done like this man's perspective on, mm-hmm. With her group quite often. Yeah. And the women are always talking. They never ask her about finances, even though she has, you know, the facilities to take care of them, but mm-hmm. they're asking me because there's just a social dynamic there. So we're launching this thing called Love and Money, and I'm not sure where it's going to go, but I do know that it's going to be cool.
Yeah. That's awesome. So this is my studio, but it's not much of a studio. It's like my home office.
Yeah. You know? I just know we get to Utah enough that we could come see you.
Oh, really? Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I'd love to. I mean, if we had to, I mean, we could like find a studio to rent and do something there, you know?
Okay.
And, I do know of a place or two that actually does that.
Yeah. Do you get out this way at all? Cause there's, I mean,
where are you again?
We're in LA.
Oh, LA. I think sometimes I do. I was actually just out there recently. But I don't think, I have anything on the books yet for LA.
Okay. Well, we don't need to we don't need to beat a dead horse, but I think the dynamic and the vibe is so good between us that, you know, once every couple months, if we have like a recurring and we could even plan what we're, you know, speaking points, I think that we could serve people at a high level. It'd be a really good, you know, media, the media would be good. There'd be some sound bites that would probably be good. So
Oh, for
yeah,
sure.
I'd look forward to doing a partnership like that with you.
That'd be great. Yeah. I mean, let me know when you're in town here. I might actually be in Southern California, not quite LA, but San Bernardino, Ontario, I might fly into for a marathon in
Okay.
November. I haven't decided if I was going to do it or not because, trying to plan around family and they hate it when I just go run. I love it. I love traveling, but
What marathon is it?
Big Bear.
Okay, got it. Yeah, that's not far. I mean,
It's like an hour or so, depending on
it'd be
traffic.
honestly with us, we're actually in the South Bay. We're 20 minutes south of LAX, which is
Oh.
we're in Manhattan Beach is where we're at.
Okay, yeah. I would say, are you as far south as Dana Point, but not that far south?
Yeah, not that far.
Yeah.
That's my wife would like to be every time we go down there, whether it's Newport or Laguna, she's like, this is the next spot.
Yeah,
I'm like,
exactly.
I don't know, man. Utah or Texas might be the next spot. California's brutal.
It's true. It's true. I actually just had a friend. I found out, like, I mean, he was in well, he was in San Clemente at first, and then he went and bought like a $22 million property in Dana Point on the ocean. And then I guess that wasn't enough for him. Then he went and bought a place on the water with a freaking yacht in Miami. I was like, dude, like, seriously, like that place in Dana Point wasn't enough for you? Like, you just had to go now to Florida. Like, I get it, like politics could be better and taxes and stuff, but
Yeah.
I was like, that's getting ridiculous, man.
We have some friends like that. It amazes me, man. And they just whatever they touch, whatever they flip, they're like 10x. But you get to that point of it's momentum really, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
all about that momentum. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah,
So.
let's definitely see if we can find something to work there. That'd be fun.
Okay. Cool. And actually, just so you know, do you know Ray Higdon?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to remember. How do I know him? Maybe it's just from
So,
social media. I don't know.
yeah. So, Ray's actually a friend of a friend. We've been at a couple parties together, like dinner parties, and talked. And he always told me, he's like, man, hey, if you ever need anything, it's one of those vibe things. Like we liked each other.
Yeah.
But he's actually going to come on.
Oh, sweet.
And so he's kind of going to blow it up because he's been on Tony Robbins stage and he's
Yeah.
been on Robert's like he so it's going to be kind of cool. So we're going to try to ride that out a little bit and he's going to do some PR for us. So
Oh, cool.
yeah, this thing might have just gotten a little bit bigger than I'm not that I intended, like I wanted it to be big, but I think it's really cool. And it's
That's
really
really cool.
gracious of him to help us out. So let's see where it
For
goes.
sure. Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, keep me posted.
That will. All right, Chris. Thanks, man. Appreciate
Yeah,
you.
Steve. We'll see you.
All right, take care.
Bye.